Hey guys, welcome to another episode of the Lemonade Podcast. This is Stephanie, and I have a special guest with me. You might have seen her or I tweet out, but I have the wonderful Femme Fatale with me, aka Rebecca Theodore. How are you?
Hi, happy Sunday. Hey, Steph.
Hey, so this has actually been a long time coming, and I don't know why I'm just now asking you to come onto the show, but better now than later.
Absolutely. Thank you for having me.
So we're really here because we want to talk about Insecure, but before we get to that, just talk about some other stuff that's been going on, because there's always some shit going on. So First, and I'm pretty sure y'all are really tired of hearing about this, but Pootie Pie, whatever the hell his name is, the white gamer who decided to say the N-word because he was gaming and got frustrated and just decided to blurt it out. And then, of course, white people swooped in and said, oh, we forgive you, when nobody asked them. So what were your feelings on that? Because me, it's just like, I thought he was already shit, and I thought this was already well known, so I was actually surprised to even see him on the timeline again.
Yeah, to be honest with you, because this happened last week Sunday, right? So it's been like a whole week since it happened. I didn't even know who that was. Like, I just came on Twitter, it was like Sunday afternoon, because I'm trying to stay off of Twitter, you know, especially on the weekends, or less time, and then I saw his name was trending, and I'm like, who the hell is that? And then that's when people had screenshots saying, you know, that he was playing online, he was gaming online, and then he used the N-word, and he said that it was in the heat of the moment. And he said, I think he said that whenever he goes online, he says that he's heard other people use that same language. And then he said, you know, I find it offensive, and I'm disappointed that I ended up using it myself. But if memory serves me right, they said that he said it more than once. It wasn't just one time that he used it, right?
Right.
So that tells me that this is part of your lexicon. This is, you know, you just put public what you've done privately. That's what you're really apologizing for. I don't really think he's apologizing for using the N-word. I think he's apologizing for getting caught, you know, because from what I understand, you know, he also has, you know, endorsements or whatever, and I'm sure that's going to impact, you know, his income or whatever. I mean, I don't know. I think I read that he said he has more than 7 million subscribers or something. Like, it's insane.
It's a lot.
Yeah. I mean, the thing that just annoyed me, number one, I also found out that he made anti-Semitic jokes, and then Disney dropped him for that. So this is not a one-time thing. He obviously has a history of saying very offensive, racist, and bigoted language. But what was interesting to me was seeing like just white people, just people white peopling as usual, and just suicide dipping for this dude, like just caping for him, like, oh, you can't, you know, you can't hold a moment of 2 seconds against him just because he said one word. How are we supposed to judge people? And then, of course, the whole irony, I know we're going to talk about this later, is that these same people that we're talking about how you should forgive people and it's just words and it doesn't mean anything. And then, you know, 2 days later, Jemele Hill tweets that Donald Trump was a white supremacist. And these same people were like after this woman. So, yeah, there's a lot of hypocrisy going on, a lot of white male privilege and a lot of hypocrisy going on, I think.
It really honestly is. And then, so off of that and on to Jemele, like, all she said was facts. There was not a lie to be found in what she said, because Trump has done nothing but align himself with white supremacists, and he himself is one. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, I don't even know what we're arguing. And then the fact that she said that, and I think, was it Miss Texas who said something along the same lines, but, you know, people just let it go because she's white. But Jemele said it, and she's a black woman. And there's been a constant theme throughout this year, especially since Trump has gotten to office, of black women being pretty much thrown under the bus for speaking up and saying what needs to be said. Mm-hmm. And it's just crazy to me. And then in the same breath, people say things like, well, black women will save us, but how are you saying that? But you can't even, speak up for a black woman who has spoken out. So it's just, it's irritating is what it is, and it's just a bunch of bullshit. I don't even know what else to say about it. And of course, ESPN being ESPN, who's also Disney owns ESPN actually. So them being them, and trying to, I don't know, not pick sides or save face or whatever. Of course, denounce what she said and wanted nothing to do with it, and then they didn't put her on for her show. And I'm so happy that Michael Smith, who is her co-host, didn't go on. Another two black anchors that they tried to get to go on didn't go on either. So I'm like, I'm really happy that that happened, because I was gonna be real upset if Michael, her co-host, would have came on, because I listened to his and hers. They had a podcast before they had the show and Numbers Number Lie and all of that. I'm like, I'm still fans of theirs, and I listened to their podcast and stuff, and I thought they were really tight. So if he would have still went on with her being, I guess, suspended or whatever ESPN called themselves doing as far as punishment was concerned, I was gonna be hot. And it was gonna be a nice little rant that was about to happen about how black men just don't be supporting black women sometimes. So I'm happy that that's not the case.
I think so too. That was just so insulting. It was sort of like, they're just black people. We could just, they're interchangeable. It's no biggie. You know what I mean? And it was just
Right,
like,
that too.
yeah, that was just, well, I'm very happy to see that her coworkers and colleagues, came to her defense and had her back, especially Michael Smith. It seems like they have a really genuine, authentic friendship, because you can have people that co-host shows all the time, but they really hate each other's guts. But I think going to bat for Jamil like that shows that they have a real friendship, and I really appreciated that. And it just broke my heart to see, just to see how targeted she was. Because I, after when she made the statement, and then I think it was a couple of days after she tweeted it, there was a press conference at the White House, and then Sarah Huckabee Sanders, was asking for her to be fired. And I'm sitting there imagining what it's like to be targeted by the White House. Like, the White House is actually saying you need to be fired. These are not like Twitter trolls or anything. Like, it's a pre this is coming from the office of the President of the United States. I mean, we know he's a clown and he's an idiot, but still, he still has that power. You know what I mean?
It's just wild. It's wild. And all of the crazy shit that was said while Obama was in office, and that never happened. So it's just, I mean, you feel how you want to feel about Obama, but just the differences is just so stark. It's just crazy to me, because people said a lot of crazy stuff about him and his family. So to have, for that to happen and then nothing happened about it, and then have this big man child that we have in office, with just such thin skin, tripping the way he does every time somebody says something or tweets something, is just outrageous. Like, he has access to, nuclear weapons. So how is he in office? I know how, but it's just, to this day, it's amazing. White people are amazing.
All I can say is like, I know this sounds so jacked up, but in this whole dumpster fire, the one demographic that can hold their heads up out of all of this are black women, because we know that 94% of black women voted against Trump. You know what I mean? And so that is the only reason why I can even hold my head up high, with all of this stuff going on, because we tried to do the right thing, right? As they say, right? We tried to tell y'all, we tried to save y'all. But you don't listen to black women. Whenever y'all don't listen to black women, this is what happens, right? You get the orange
Yep.
with it. So, yeah.
And I mean, yeah, just listen to black women. I mean, it is just a period after that, because I don't even know what else. I don't know what else to say.
Nothing.
So moving on from that, so I usually segue into comics, but I really didn't read any new comics this week. And I know there are, of course, a ton that came out, but I just didn't have time because of MKUA, and that's currently recording. But I do want to talk about, or at least mention, the death of the co-creator of Storm, Lin Wein. That happened last week as well, which is unfortunate. And it's also unfortunate that for all of the news outlets that reported on this, all I saw was creator of Wolverine, creator of Swamp Thing, and so on. I'm just like, So Storm isn't iconic. That's one of his most iconic characters as well. So I wasn't really a fan of that, but I mean, what more could I expect from comics Twitter? Yeah. At this, I
I
kept.
didn't even to be honest with you, I know I mean I read comic books. I'm not for some creators or like the icons that I'm still not used to. So I'm like, who the hell is what? But I didn't know that he was the creator or co-creator of a Storm. I had no idea.
And you wouldn't have known because they didn't even mention. I mean, I'm just saying, like, you would, and then you also still wouldn't have known because it wasn't even really mentioned in the headlines. It was just all with Wolverine, Swamp Thing, and some of the stuff he's done for DC. But for somebody who, doesn't read comics like that or just didn't flat out know, you wouldn't have known until you actually opened up and read, whatever the article said and if they happened to mention it, which a lot of them didn't. So.
Wow.
Yeah, that's some bullshit. But from bullshit to something much, much better. There was a hashtag that's going on all weekend called Drawing While Black. It was created by Sparkly Fawn. Her name is Annabelle, and she created this hashtag to just pretty much celebrate black artists. And I don't know if you all have seen the hashtag, but you should. I know I've retweeted as much as I can, but just so many black artists, and just really no reason for anyone, any of the big two or any other comic book companies to say that, oh, we can't find black artists because they're like all up and through that hashtag. Like that hashtag is the receipt of all receipts. Did you get a chance to see it?
I did. I've been following it since what was it, Friday? Was it Friday, Saturday?
I think it was Friday it jumped off, yeah.
Friday it jumped off. And I've been retweeting as many as I can, and especially I've been trying to make a point to especially retweet or amplify black women
Same.
artists. And I mean, I've been seeing there's this one, I'm trying to go through my timeline right now. She's 16 years old. I'm gonna tell you guys which one she is. Let's see if I can find it. But yeah, it's I think she said she was 16 years old. She's self-taught. Okay, that's the thing, is like a lot
Oh,
of
I know
people.
who you're talking about. Yeah.
I retweeted it and I quote tweeted it and said, please find help this girl find a an art scholarship. Like her art is just amazing. And that's the one common thread that I found with a lot of the artists in Drawing While Black, is that quite a few of them admit to being self-taught. And it was just like, oh my God, imagine if you actually went to school and got further training. You know what I mean? I can't listen, I can't even make stick figures correctly. I have zero artistic talent at all, and I'm okay with that. I can write, I have other skill sets, but it's just like that's always been like a dream of mine. I wish, well, two things. I wish I could draw, and I wish I could sing. Oh, her name is Serena Robertson. Her Twitter handle is Oh So Serena, so it's OHSOCERENA. She's a young black woman, and I just was like, oh my God, her. I'm actually thinking that I might reach out to her to see if I can commission some art for some projects
Ooh,
I'm having.
nice.
Pay her, give her some money. You got to support black artists, and you got to give them money too.
You do.
Yeah, she's super talented. But yeah, there's so much talent out there. I hope that they're sending this to Marvel and DC, because good Lord, these people could be hired. It's not a joke.
No, they could. I'm like, it's just really no excuse. It's just, y'all don't want to look. So I'm glad that this hashtag happened, and I really hope you all took the time out to just take a look and retweet and support them if they have Patreons or stores or whatever, and just support black art. So, movie and like show stuff, which is I know your realm and your wheelhouse. So, I quickly wanted to mention the movie It, and I guess it did fine at the movie theaters. I have not seen it yet. I'm probably not gonna see it until it's at home and I can just stream it or something. Not because I don't think it's good, it's just that that is not my ministry. So I'm gonna wait until I can watch it at home at my own leisure. Have you seen it?
I have. I saw it last Sunday.
What did you think?
You know what? I actually like it. I mean, I read the book. I read the novel. And that was years ago. Gosh, when did I read the novel? Like 90, 91. And then I do remember the TV miniseries. There was actually a TV adaptation of it, and I believe John Ritter, the actor from Three's Company, and I forget the other actors. So there was a TV. Oh, and Tim Curry played Pennywise. He played the clown. I have to be honest with you. I really wasn't crazy about the TV miniseries because I knew it was television, and you know, and it was broadcast television. I think it was ABC or one of them.
It was
So
ABC.
it was ABC. Yeah. So I knew they could only go so far. And I think having a movie adaptation was definitely a smart move. I feel like there was enough distance between the TV series in order for them to do a movie. And yeah, like I know originally Cary Fukunaga, who's my boo, my future baby daddy, was supposed to direct it, but then I think he had like creative differences or something. He walked away, and then they got his name is Andy Muschietti. I think that's the director. And so yeah, I went in watching it. Like I saw the trailer. The trailer freaked me out, and I think the movie did a very did a serviceable job. I think they definitely captured the scariness of the book. There are certain moments that I walked into the movie. I was curious to see how they were going to execute it and would it live up to, you know, my expectations. So I think there were definitely scenes where they definitely nailed the horror, and it was, I know I slept with the lights on when I came home that night. So yeah, I mean, I think it was a little long. I felt like there were some parts that, you know, definitely they could have cut down on, but yeah, I'm really looking forward to the sequel because from what I understand they're splitting it up into two parts. So this movie is the younger version of the losers, like the teenage version, and the sequel is going to be you know, the adult version, because if you watch the movie you'll understand why they have to come back. But yeah, it was, I'm very, like my sister and I were kind of like wish casting the adult cast, and of course we both came up with Jessica Chastain. We both said we wanted to see Jessica Chastain as the older version of Bev. She's the girl in the group, the lead actress in the group, and because in the cat in the book she has red hair. They were like, of course, Jessica Chastain. I could see Amy Adams doing it too, because the actress who plays the younger version has the same saucer eyes as Amy Adams. For some reason, I don't know why I want him in this movie, but I just see him in it. I want Joseph Gordon-Levitt in this movie. I can see him either playing like the older version of Billy or maybe one of the other boys. You know, from the Losers Club. But I just see Joseph Gordon-Levitt in it, and partly the other reason why I want him in this movie is because I need Joseph Gordon-Levitt to have a win. His movie career has not been that great the last few years. He's had some flops, you know, at least I would say box office wise. You know, but I'm a fan of Joseph Gordon-Levitt. I think he's actually very talented, and he's very humble. He's very creative. He's very smart. I just don't think he's made, I don't know. I guess if you're looking at, as far as commercially successful box office movies, the last hit he'd really had was maybe The Dark Knight Rises, I guess, or Inception. I think those are the two of his biggest movies, and everything else has kind of been like putt-putt. Hasn't been.
I agree. No, I actually agree, 'cause I'm
Yeah.
like, why is he not,
I don't
why
know.
are we not seeing more of him?
Yeah, I mean, I know he did. Didn't he do that movie? Oh shoot, it was a biopic. Why am I forgetting the name of the guy? He was the guy who leaked the secrets. I can't remember his name right now.
Snowden.
Yes,
Yeah, I don't know.
and that was supposed to be like his, because he was in the Oscar roundtable last year. Remember, with the usually when they do the Oscar roundtable for Hollywood Reporter, that's usually their way of predicting who's actually going to get an Oscar nomination. So he was in the round table last year, but then when the Oscar noms came out, it was like nothing happened.
I was
Yeah, you know what I mean? And then he did another biopic. He was like, he played like this French tightrope walker or something.
I forgot the name of it, but yeah.
Yeah, and so it was just like he's just been doing movies and just they just haven't been hitting. So I was just like, I think it being an it would actually kind of maybe revitalize his career, I think, in a good way, because I mean,
I would think so.
because I mean, it is making ridiculous amount of money. Like, I knew it was gonna do well, but I mean, $123 million opening weekend for a
That's
horror movie?
crazy. That's crazy.
Amazing, amazing. And so I was like, yeah, you need to get on that. And I think because it's made so much money, because I think I was just checking right now, worldwide it's made like over 300. I think that will definitely allow the studio to afford maybe more like a list. Now they could probably afford a Jessica Chastain. They could afford a Joseph Gordon-Levitt. You know what I mean? Like, I think that could work. But who do you think, like, who would you want to cast for like the black kid, like the black teenager? Which actor would you want to see them cast like as the older version?
Actually, Sterling K. Brown.
Great minds think alike. Great minds think
Yeah,
alike.
like, I mean, not even because he's just in the forefront of my mind because of Insecure or this is what is I'm about to say All of Us, but This Is Us. But no, I think he would be really perfect for that role, to be honest, because the dad from Sister Sister was in the TV movie.
Oh yeah,
You
I wasn't
remember?
that good.
Yeah.
Yeah, I wasn't
So,
that good.
no, I wasn't a fan either, but
No.
no, I think Sterling K. Brown would really knock that out the park, to be very park, to be really honest.
Yeah. Oh, the character's name is Mike Hanlon. And I saw some. This goes back to the fact that I haven't read the book in so long, but I did see some concerning the black character in it. There were think pieces or opinion pieces that were saying how it whitewashed Mike Hanlon's backstory. Of course, I haven't read the book in yet, so I don't remember, but I know they said that his character had experienced racism, because his family was like the only black family in this town. And so there was definitely some racism that his family experienced, but in the movie they don't really say that. You know that his parents were his parents there's no spoilers here. His parents were murdered in a house in a fire, but I think it was caused by like the KKK or like Klansmen or racists in the town, but it's never explicitly said in the movie. You know what I mean? Like, I sat there and I knew what it was about. I was like, of course, they're the only black family, that's why they were killed. But I guess people were expecting it to kind of lean into that and really talk about that, and they did it. Which, it wasn't a big quibble for me. I guess again, I'd have to read the book and see it, like how deeply it goes into that. But again, when you have white storytellers, what do you expect? You know what I mean? Like,
No, I mean, no, honestly, like, what do you expect?
if you had like a black screenwriter or like black producers, I'm sure they would have been like, hey, maybe we need to really keep this in the script. So, not making excuses for them, but I'm sure they were just sort of like, I'm sure the audience is smart. I'm sure they'll put two and two together. But I'm hoping that maybe in the sequel, when they do the sequel, and hopefully, casting our pick Sterling K. Brown, that they could perhaps take this time to revisit that. You know what I mean? And
Yeah.
talk about the racism in a very intelligent way. Because I'm sure they were like, we don't want it to overpower the movie or whatever. But yeah, but I mean, it is a fact of life that racism exists, and that's a specific type of horror, right? You're talking about
Right.
some alien freaking clown running around the town, but racism for us is like it's a real life horror. As if you watch Get Out, which is why Get Out was so brilliant. That's a horror that we live with every day. So, with really good writers, you could expand on that in the sequel, and it won't overpower the story. If anything, I think it might intersect. You could find a lot of parallels with that.
And for sure, and also if it's important to the character, which I think it is, if his parents were killed due to racism, then I think that would be pretty important to make sure it's mentioned. So I hope that they do that for the sequel. And there's definitely going to be a sequel. If it made that much money the way Hollywood works, they already wrote the check for the sequel.
Yeah. Let me see how much they've made so far. They're making it. Oh, good Lord. $179 million. This is pretty impressive. impressive. Like,
That's a lot of money for a horror
yeah.
movie.
Yeah, and they were really good performances too. I felt like the way they cast the kids, they like everybody that they got was pretty much dead on. I liked pretty much everybody that they cast. Oh, okay, so domestically they've made $218 million, and overseas they made 152. So collectively they've made $371 million, and that's just the second week. And their production budget was $35 million.
Wow.
Yeah,
Oh yeah, there's definitely a sequel coming for sure.
for
Like
sure.
I don't see like that not
And
happening.
maybe a third. I don't be surprised.
So moving on to a movie that isn't getting such rave reviews or somebody line, I don't know who, Mother with the exclamation point, the movie that's helmed by Jennifer Lawrence and what is the guy's name?
Harvey,
The other
Javier Bardem.
Right,
Yeah, or you mean the
which is actually
director?
really fun. No, the her co-star, because I was like, oh, he is cute. But so this movie, I didn't know what to make, and I couldn't make heads or tails of it. I'm just like, you put an exclamation point in the title, that to me tells me that this movie is gonna be one that really, really hangs its hat on its symbolism and everything else, and probably gonna have a headache. So as far as reviews have gone, it's been really mixed. I think The Hollywood Reporter, there was a review that said it was, I guess, great, and Jennifer Lawrence is the next, I guess, actress for the generation or some shit like that. And then there is another review that says this movie is terrible. It's the worst of 2017. So, what is truth?
I haven't seen Mother yet. Full disclosure, I have not seen it yet. I'm planning to see it this week. That being said, I tweeted this a little bit earlier. I muted the Mother movie hashtag and just Mother movie. Like, I'm just about done because it's such a polarizing movie, which, I actually think I like movies where there can be debate. You know what I mean? Not, I kind of like movies that are controversial, whether I hate it or not. I just like seeing the conversation in general. But now it's just gotten ridiculous. And the reason why I've muted the conversation is because it's not even about the merits of the movie. The debate is about the intelligence of moviegoers. And I can't stand that sort of elitism. You know what I mean? Where it's like, oh, like somebody tweeted, they were like, oh, well, it. Number one movie in America, and it's making more movie than Mother. That kind of tells you where the intelligence of America, just kind of shading moviegoers. Like, if you like it over Mother, you're stupid. Really? Like, is this the kind of conversation that we want to have? Like, no, you can talk to me about narrative structure, those kind of things, cinematography. Talk to me about the artistic values of the movie, why you like it or why you don't like it. But this is the thing I don't like about film critic. Twitter or film Twitter in general is that if you they judge you based on the movies that you like. There's a judgment on your personality and your intelligence based on that. And when I first came into film criticism the first few years, I was very afraid of that. It was like, I was like, well, let me say that I like the right movies. Let me, throw out these obscure movies so I can show, or prove. And who was I really proving it to? White men. I don't have anything to prove to those guys. You know what I mean? And once I got over that, I like what I like. And if you don't like it, F you. There goes the unfollow button. I don't really care. That's not my concern. I stand by the fact that I'm a huge stan for Fast and Furious 5. That's one of my favorite action movies. I do not need to justify that or tell you, oh, well, I'm still a smart film critic. If you don't, I don't care. Like, yo, I was watching John Wick 2 yesterday. And I was just sitting there like, yo, I mean, listen, it is what it is. John Wick is just no more or no less than what it is. But even I could sit there and appreciate the things that I saw about John Wick. I could appreciate the cinematography of John Wick. It is gorgeous. The color palette, there were homages to like Bruce Lee in there. I mean, it's not the deepest movie, but there's definitely cinematic references in there, if you really sit there and pay attention to it. And I shouldn't have to feel guilty for liking those movies. You know what I mean? Or have to prove I'm a true cinephile because I like, Ingmar Bergman movies. Like a few, like some of these movies that are benchmarks of true cinephile intelligence are actually very boring to me. Real talk. I'm not really a fan of Citizen Kane. I'll openly say that. You know what I mean? Like I don't really care, and I don't have to prove myself. And I always tell, critics of color that you don't have to prove anything to anyone but yourself. You don't need to, try to get into the boys club of film Twitter. Like, F them. They know that they're a dying breed. They're old, cranky, get off my lawn dinosaurs. And they kind of see where film criticism is going, and they don't like where it's heading. You know what I mean? And so that's why they're throwing all of these things out, because they see that people of color and marginalized groups are actually having a say what movies they like or which movies deserve to be seen, and they see that they're losing their grip on being the gatekeepers. And so there's this backlash right now, you know what I mean? And so I just think that we just need to lean in. I don't have to prove anything to anybody. That's how I feel, so.
No, I mean, and I feel like that overall, there's like an overall theme of just that, in film and also comics and some other stuff too, where these old white guys are being pushed out and things are changing as more people of color give voices and they're able to have platforms and stuff to be heard. So this is like an epidemic. I mean, this is like going on, like, I feel like industry-wise and whatever industry, the gaming, all of it. There was like, I don't know if there was a article on it or I just seen some of it on Twitter where I guess there was a conversation going on about comic critics and how they're destroying comics and it's just, but what critics and what are they saying? Because they're saying things that need to be said. So it's just interesting.
Yeah,
I
bro.
mean, white men are shook and they're just gonna remain shook because we're clearly not going anywhere. I mean, Al Gore's internet is here. So
Very true.
that's just wow. There's nothing wrong with liking Fast and Furious 5.
Thank
So they
you.
can keep right.
Thank you
So,
very much.
I just wanted to quickly mention that Wonder Woman 2 will be directed by Patty Jenkins. If you really haven't seen me talk much about Wonder Woman in itself, period, or the news, or just it's just because I'm just really meh about it. Like, I'm happy that Wonder Woman 2 is happening. I'm happy that Patty Jenkins will be directing it, but I don't have any feelings about Wonder Woman, and I hate that I don't, but I just don't. And they added the writer from Expendables 3 to it's her and Zack Snyder is writing Wonder Woman 2 along with her, and then the guy from Expendables 3. And I'm just like, okay, so two guys and a woman. That's gonna pan out well. So we'll see.
Let me talk to you about I'm laughing because you and I share petty the same way, Steph. I'll be the first one to say that I still have not seen Wonder Woman.
Oh, girl,
I plan to,
you
let me be
need
clear. I plan to see Wonder Woman, but like when it opened, like their theatrical release, by the time that Wonder Woman opened, I was so through with Becky Twitter, so through with them. I was like, I'm sitting on my money. I ain't giving this money. I'm not giving this movie any money. And let me be clear as to why. Okay, two reasons why, and I'm sure you know this stuff because we were tracking the conversations, right? There were two parallel conversations going on concerning Wonder Woman, right? One conversation was the fact that people were actually arguing that actress who plays Wonder Woman, Gal Gadot, she's Israeli, was a woman of color, right? So, we were talking, it was, black women like yourself, Asian women, Latino women, we were on social media saying, when are we going to get a superhero franchise, with a woman of color, right? A superhero franchise with a woman of color. And then you had people, and this was a mix of white people, Jewish people, just like across the board, that were actually making the argument that Gal Gadot was a woman of color, ergo, Wonder Woman is a woman of color superhero. And I was like, really? Is this really the hill that you guys want to die on? And this conversation had started back in like 2015, 2016. And then it resurrected weeks leading up to the release of Wonder Woman, and I was just like, y'all are really trying to go in the hard in the paint, trying to tell me that Gal Gadot is a woman of color, right? When it clearly, if you do a search on Gal Gadot, if you look at her genealogy, this woman is white, okay? Or as I would like to say, spicy white.
I was going to say spicy white.
She's a spicy white. You know, she has olive colored skin, darker hair, but make no mistake, Gal Gadot. Here's the test, right? In a casting office, or when they're casting movies, when Gal Gadot walks into an office, walks into a casting room, they're not seeing her as a woman of color. Trust and believe that. You know what I mean? And, you know, people who were making this argument, I asked them a very fair question. I was like, okay, if you want to make the argument that Gal Gadot is a woman of color, right? We know that Gal Gadot auditioned for Wonder Woman. He was handed the role. I want to see the vetting list of other actresses of color that were able to audition for Wonder Woman. If you cannot show me the receipts of any women of color who auditioned for Wonder Woman, then your argument is bullshit, because I think we all know that it was only white women that were being seen for that role. Right? So yeah. That was argument number one. And I was like, okay, I'm through with you people. Then the second argument was, you know, white feminist Twitter that was just, oh, Lord. They were just doing the most about this movie, doing the most. And again, this was criticisms of when, and this was the criticism that you and I and Shannon and Lauren, Warren and Chanel Little, we were all out there. And other, Asian American, Latina, and Native American women critics, we were like, why is Wonder Woman so white? Right? Because if you read the comic books, Themyscira is supposed to be very diverse, but in all the promos, all the pictures, all the promos, all the behind the scenes, all the trailers, they released like 3 trailers, right? Every trailer they released, I was just sitting there like, where are the Black women? Where are the Asian women? I don't see these people, right? And then, of course, Well Actually Twitter was like, oh, if you go on IMDb, you can find them. Of course, if you scrolled all the way at the damn bottom, you could find these people. And some of them weren't even speaking roles, right? Yep. And so the argument was like, why wasn't Philippus cast? Why weren't we know Artemis was cast with a Black woman, but from what I understand, she had a minimal amount of screen time. I just felt that the marketing of Wonder Woman, for me, I'm talking about the marketing of Wonder Woman was a fail as far as inclusiveness, right? Because if this movie is supposed to be about, Wonder Woman is a feminist icon. There's no debating that, right? I just feel that for a movie that was supposed to embody female empowerment, for it to be so white was a fail. It was a fail, and I didn't feel like that was a celebration for me. I mean, I'm not saying you as a person of color can't watch shows with white people or like, you know what I mean? That's not what I'm saying. All I'm saying is that for this specific movie, you could have done a better job. And I throw this on Warner Brothers, right? The studio that released Wonder Woman. I felt that they did not do a good enough job in showing the inclusivity of Wonder Woman. They just didn't. You know what I mean? And whenever we, as women of color, would mention this, again, white feminist Twitter was just like in their feelings. And I'm like, okay, facts are not feelings. You could sit there and you could be upset and you could cry, but we're not saying anything that's not true, right?
Right. I mean, it just is what it is.
Yeah.
Because when I actually ended up seeing the movie the weekend that it came out, just by way of, my husband was like, aren't you supposed to be talking about this movie? And I was like, yeah. So he's like, you should probably go see it. So it's like the only reason why I ended up seeing it. And Themyscira, like, they have Black women there, and I guess there were other women of color, but I couldn't really tell. And I was just surprised that there were more Black women there than I actually thought, because you would never know from the marketing, like you said. But even the Black women that were present, other women of color that questionably were present, they were just kind of there. Mm-hmm. I mean, the movie in itself, I mean, to me, I'm just like, for a DC movie, this was for the DC movies that we've currently been getting. It was good. The third act was trash, in my opinion. And We're all up and through Europe and like not like I think I saw like two black men. So it was just, yeah, it was very, I don't know. I can't make heads or tails about it, but I mean, I'm happy that they're getting a Wonder Woman 2. That makes sense, and Patty's gonna direct it. But for all the reasons that you just mentioned, and then the ones that I've mentioned before, I just don't feel any kind of way about Wonder Woman, and I can't because I guess some folks have kind of ruined that because the conversations that I happened online, like you said, white feminist Twitter just really doing the fucking most, so. It just really kind of turned me off. I'm like, I'll just go watch Justice League Unlimited and get my Wonder Woman kicks from there because y'all doing too much.
Was like, again, it was like, people, there are fans, obviously there are fans of the Wonder Woman comic who are not white. There are black men, Asian men, Asian women, Latino women, across the spectrum. I mean, Wonder Woman is an international icon. There's no denying that. All I'm saying is that, the optics, it was just an optic fail. It was just an optic as far as the marketing and I give people an example like Atomic Blonde, right? Atomic Blonde, stars Charlize Theron. Let's dissect. Charlize Theron is white, whiter than white. But I was hyped to see that movie. You know what I mean? And the reason why I had no problem with Atomic Blonde is because Atomic Blonde was not marketing itself or promising itself to be inclusive. It just was what it was. You know what I mean? It's an action movie starring Charlize Theron. There was the love interest, the female love interest she had in the movie is a woman of color. I'm forgetting her name right now. But I just feel like Atomic Blonde wasn't making these promises. Is all I'm saying. It wasn't making these promises. It just was what it was, and that's fine. I have no problem with it. But I just felt like with Wonder Woman, the comic book is inclusive, Themyscira is diverse, and that should have been reflected in the marketing. It would have been nothing for them, nothing for them to have featurettes or videos of the women of color of Themyscira, right? Like you could have shown the actress, what's her name? Anne Wolfe, right? You could have had her, you know what I mean? And just to show you how paltry the representation was, I was looking at the black outlets. Essence didn't have anything. The Root had nothing. I don't think the Root had anything, or Ebony, any of like the prominent black outlets, they weren't. They didn't have any interviews with any of the black women in Wonder Woman because they couldn't be found. There was nothing to talk to them about. You know what I mean? I mean, that goes both ways because I feel like as reporters, as black outlets, we have to look through these movie releases and just literally, like, that's what I do. I literally look through IMDb and try to find the black talent and try to see if I can pitch a story about them. But yeah, like you didn't even reach out. But again, that's on the studio too. The studio, their public relations department, that's part of their job, right? Like if you have people of color, you reach out for these respective outlets and try to give them shine. Like if you had Asian actresses in there, you reach out to, NBC Asian America. If there's Latina actresses in there, you reach out to Latina Magazine or get the Latin Geek. Like any, you know what I'm saying? Like you could have done it that way, but they didn't do that, So, yeah, that was a fail. I'm not blaming the actresses. I'm not blaming the actresses. I'm just really putting this on the studio. I'm not trying to be hard on Patty Jenkins because, she's a director. Directors sometimes they don't really understand the politics of what goes on, but I feel that the studio should have done a better job. So on one hand, I am happy for Patty Jenkins. I think she's now going to be like the highest paid female director because Wonder Woman 2, she's getting a paycheck of like $67 million, which is
Yeah, it
fantastic.
is.
So my thing is, here's my thing. Now that Patty Jenkins has this platform, right? And now that she is now the most successful, at least financially, as far as women directors, what I'm looking for is seeing if she is going to use that to open the door for for other women directors, and specifically for other women of color directors, right? Because, you know, we've seen this before where, you know, you have white women directors, but they only put their sister in on, if you know what I'm saying. You know what I mean? Like, it's like white woman director puts on white woman director, puts on white woman director. But women of, you know, color cannot be seen. Like, I have rarely seen a mentorship of a white woman director putting a woman of color director on. I haven't seen that. Just even friendships between white actresses and actresses of color. The only ones that I can think of are Meryl Streep and Viola Davis, right?
Yeah.
I don't see Emma Stone catching a Starbucks with Gugu Mbatha Raw. Like, I've never seen that. You know what I'm saying? Like, even the sisterhood of Hollywood, whether actresses, directors, or producers, is still segregated. White women put white women on. Women of color put women of color on. Like, Ava is doing the damn thing right now. Like, she's opened the door for so many women. And if you look at Ava, she's very specific. She puts on black women, queer women, Latina women, Middle Eastern women. She has white women working.
Yeah, she does on Queen Sugar. Yes.
Yes. That is the true meaning of allyship and inclusiveness. But yeah. I would like to see if Patty is going to do that too. And I'm sure, you know, there'll be some white women listening to this podcast talking about, oh, we can't put all the responsibility on Patty. Yes, the hell we can.
I mean, why not, though?
$6 to $7 million, boo. Yes, we can.
Right. No. And I mean, like, why not? Like, if y'all can come out the side of your neck and say that black women are supposed to save the world, then I think expecting Patty Jenkins to put some women of color on, or at least open the door for them, I think that's feasible. So time will tell. We will see, and we're going to pay attention and just see what happens. So to get to what we've actually here to talk about, Insecure. Insecure. So first I want to mention, I don't know if you all have seen it or not, but there was something from the mic going around, and I think a couple of other outlets, news outlets as well, about how the cinematographer for Insecure and the lighting of black folks. And before you get your fingers ready to tweet, we are well aware that there are other black cinematographers that have gotten the lighting of black actors and actresses correct, but you know, they just had that little piece on her. And I thought that was really cool. And it was also cool to see Barry Jenkins retweet that. And Rebecca, you talked about Bradford Young and just a lot of, you know, up and coming black cinematographers getting, you know, the shine that they deserve for making black people look really damn good on screen.
Right. Right. Yeah. I mean, I saw the article, and yes, I absolutely agree that the cinematography of Insecure is beautiful. I love the framing. I love the coloring. And, you know, Issa is just, you know, a darker skinned black woman with natural hair that has really been normalized. If you think about it, we rarely get that sort of representation. You know, in other shows, Issa would be the spunky, sassy best friend, right? And, you know, usually the lead would just be, you know, lighter skin or biracial with gray hair. You know what I mean?
Yeah, no, that's true.
You know, but to see this dark-skinned black woman who was the center of this story, you know, and her hair, I'm always looking at Issa's hair trying to see how she's going to style it, because her style is always on 100. I love how she does. I think Felicia Leatherwood is her hairstylist. She's a celebrity hairstylist, and she specializes in natural hair. And so the way Issa wears her hair is always dope. But yeah, like, you know, I it was great to see that article. I was just sort of like, I mean, I was sort of one of those people that was like, hey, there's other cinematographers that like black people too.
No, it's okay.
Yeah. And I wasn't taking anything away from, because, you know, I love Insecure. I wasn't taking anything away from them. But I am saying that, you know, because that publication is a mainstream publication, you know, unfortunately for non-people of color, sometimes their vision is very, it's not panoramic, right? So they'll just read that article and just be like, oh yeah, she's the only cinematographer that knows how to light black people's skin. And so thread that I created on Twitter about Bradford Young was really just opening people's minds. Because of course, even with my thread, I was just focusing on Bradford Young. There's other Black cinematographers and other cinematographers that have a history. There's a history of lighting Black skin beautifully. But it's just me just giving adding to the conversation. That's all I was trying to do, just add to the conversation because hopefully. I think the first tweet I used a shot of Danai Gurira from Mother of George, which I think is still streaming on Netflix. So when I tweeted it out, what was great was having people, come to me and ask me. They were like, "Oh my God, this shot is so beautiful. I've never seen Danai, shot like that before. Where can I find this movie?" And it was gratifying to be like, "Hey, you can go see Mother of George," which is one of my favorite movies, just didn't get the shine that I think it deserved. Just directing people to other indie movies that Bradford Young has done. You know what I mean?
No,
And
definitely, for sure.
yeah, that's all I was doing. And of course, there's lots of other Black cinematographers that I didn't mention, but yeah, Insecure is doing the damn thing. I mean, I'm very happy for them.
They are. And so that brings me to something that I wanted to talk about, the Insecure fandom. So let me know if you feel the same way, but of course, I really enjoy the show. It's a mess. The characters are a mess, but I think that's what makes it good because they're a mess and they make terrible, horrible decisions. And we've seen this before in other shows, but the cast is usually all white. So I'm here for this storytelling, but I always hesitate whether or not I want to tweet about how I felt about the episode of Insecure because I always dread the engagement that happens afterwards. Because my favorite thing to do on Mondays after Insecure had premiered the night before was to check out the Insecure HBO hashtag because it was just entertaining as hell. Because you, I can never really tell if people are like projecting or if they're really tweeting and it's just like, wait, is this about the characters or is this about you? So it's really interesting the fandom of Insecure and because the characters are such a mess and they just make such terrible decisions and life choices, just it gives people an opportunity to sit on a high horse and judge the fuck out of folks,
Right.
which is irritating sometimes.
Yeah, but you know what? The thing is, like, I'm just outing myself. I'm gonna be 46 this week, and so, the characters in Insecure, from what I understand, they're supposed to be like mid to late 20s, right? So these people are like, they're
You're like
half
my
my age.
age.
They're your age and half my age, so I could low key could be mama's to some of these characters if I started really early. If I was like a teenage mom, I could potentially be Issa's mother. That just blows my mind. But yeah, it was like what I've been seeing is like people like in my age range, like in the maybe in the 40 plus age range, and some in the 30s. I have noticed that there's been a judgment on the characters, and this is not about the writing, or whatever, but just like their life choices or what they do or whatever. Like, Issa's been very open, like, any Sunday when she's live tweeting Insecure, like the vitriol that she will get from like Black male viewers, holy crap. I was just like, are y'all serious right now? They're like, you're a hoe, you're this and that. And of course, this all goes back to the fact of cheating on her boyfriend in season one. And we all know the double standard, right? We watch lots of shows where male protagonists cheat on their spouses all the time. They don't get half the hate that Issa's character gets, right? Because, I watch Mad Men. The Don Draper character stayed stepping on his wife, stayed stepping out on his wife. And I don't ever remember people tweeting that Don Draper was a hoe or Don, like I never saw it. You know what they said? They said he was complicated and that he was flawed and three-dimensional. That's what they said. You know what I mean? And we've seen this other male characters that have cheated on their wives. They don't get that same kind of blowback as female characters that cheat on their wives, right? So there's that. And then, yeah, I feel like I was talking to a friend of mine. I feel like there's a certain impatience that people have with these characters, right? They're just like, oh my God, why do they keep making the same stupid decisions and everything? And what's interesting about to me is that I really think that the writers are doing an excellent job because that is human nature. Like, I was like,
Yes.
you guys just have really short memories. Like, you're gonna tell me that there's not a bad mistake that you guys, or either a relationship or a professional decision, whatever it is, where you just kept circling around the drain and kind of repeating it until you kind of snap yourself out of that pattern. That's real life for me. Like, when I think about my 20s and 30s, I was like, child, that was nothing but bad decisions.
But I'm saying
Nothing
like,
but bad. Yeah.
but I think that's what makes the show, like you said, it makes it really good because I mean that's real. I don't know who has their life figured out in their 20s, even in their late 20s. I can tell you right now, I still don't have my life figured out, and I don't think I ever will. But for me, like when I watch it, yeah, I'm thinking like, man, that's a dumbass decision, Molly. Why are you sleeping with him? And you know damn well like that's not the type of relationship you want. But at the same time, I'm like, I get it. So no judgment, no judgment for me. Like I get it. Like I get why you did it. Speaking to that episode specifically, like when she finds out that her dad cheated on her mom and she had, held the relationship up on this pedestal. A lot of people do that, so that's real. And I'm not surprised that she ended up sleeping with Joe in that moment of weakness. And I just didn't like, I get it. Like, yeah, it wasn't wise because it's just not the type of relationship that she's looking for. But like, that's real shit. Like that would happen. And then when I saw him tweet about it, I'm like, wait, are we talking about Molly? Or are we talking about you?
I think Molly's decision, like when I look at the Molly character, particularly her talking about this decision of her going back to Dro, while I disagree with it, of course it's a bad decision. I mean, intellectually, we all know it's a bad decision. But to me, as a TV critic, as a film writer, and just as a viewer, it's fascinating to watch the dynamics of why she came to that decision. People are talking about the what, but they're not investigating the why, right?
Right.
Because Molly is on this journey where she's successful, she's beautiful, she has this idea of what things are supposed to be like, but while things are, she can kind of sort of have control over her professional life, her personal life, she has not found her Mr. Right, right? So Dro presents to her, at least to me, Dro is stability. This is a guy who literally grew up across the street from her. He is her childhood friend, right? So this is someone who saw you through braces, through all your awkwardness, your bad haircuts, your bad dates, everything, right? And she's in a free fall right now. Her professional life is not going the way that she wants. Finding out that her parents' marriage was not the perfect utopia that she thought it was really threw her for a loop. And people judging Molly for that really threw me for a loop, because I'm like, you found out something about your parents that you didn't know about. Of course people would be upset. Yeah, she was a little extra leaving the wedding and everything, the wedding reception, but I understood it. You know what I mean? She's a daddy's girl. That was what was established in that episode, is that she is like the favorite child, right? Her daddy dotes on her, and so her father is everything to her. And then to find out that he cheated on her and that the mother took him back, right? Because then she's looking at her mother like, why would you do that? You know what I mean? And then Dre was there, to comfort her. He drove her home. Girl, I get it. Like, I was, especially with the sex scene, like, Dre was throwing it down. Like, his stroke game was on point. Like, I get it. I get it. Like, I was just sitting there like, girl, I understand. I mean, it's not right, but girl, do you? You know what I mean? Like, so for her to take him back in the season finale, especially when you see with her the Lil Rel's character, I forget the name of the lawyer, right? The one with the glasses.
It was just at the tip of my tongue, Quentin.
Quentin, yes, right? So the Quentin character, I actually thought that I was actually saying that. I was like, oh, I hope Molly gives Quentin a chance because he's cute, he's supportive, he's funny, and I always feel like the best mate is someone that understands you and makes you laugh. Can't laugh with your mate, y'all have no business being together, like real talk. So I was waiting to see how that would transpire, right? So you have the scene where they're in the office, they're working late together, and then they had sex, right? That pretty much told me everything I needed to know. Because the scene, like this, and like Steph, let's keep it 100. Like that sex scene was super awkward. It
It
was super
was,
awkward.
and it, and to me, like it felt like Molly was just, because prior to that, we had the scene of her at her therapist, and they talked about her, things that she should have or what she can have or whatever. So I took that as Molly taking it as an opportunity. Well, Joel's married and whatever, but Quentin is here, so why can't I not partake in this as well? So. And then the way that she was describing what happened to Issa and then and Kelly, I'm like, yeah, no, girl. I mean, I know Quentin has been supportive and it makes you laugh and all of that, but it sounds like, there really isn't a physical connection there. And I think that's very, I mean, to me personally, I feel like a physical connection is just as important as an emotional one. So, and that
Thank
clearly was
you.
lacking.
Yeah. And so, as imperfect as the situation with Roe is, like Quentin had the funny and the charm, but, and I said this, I was like, the scene where she, like you said, where the next scene after she had sex with Quentin, when she was hanging out with Issa and Kelly, that was very telling. People, it's not what people say, it's what they don't say. She was not talking about her sexual experience with Quentin. Like,
It
listen,
just
as
sounded
women,
very matter of fact.
yes, and they had to ask her. They had to ask her to this. She didn't tweet. I mean, she didn't text them. She didn't. I'm gonna go on full confession here. I've had good dick, okay? So good that I took my phone and I was like, yeah, I'm going to the bathroom. And I would text my girlfriend in the bathroom, like, girl, you know what I mean?
I told
Like,
y'all
you
I
can't
ran a red light,
really.
so I mean,
That's how your girls talk to each other. You talk about how he put it down. Oh, girl, he went down on me. Like, there are no holds barred. I think if men knew how women talk about sex, they would be petrified because they'd never want to perform ever again. We're very critical, okay? And so the fact that Molly was not talking about it told me that Quentin probably didn't satisfy her. But then
No,
again,
yeah.
yeah, go ahead.
No, I was gonna say, and even not even just that, but prior to all of that happened, when we first the first scene of her 30 days, when she shows the picture to Issa, when she's being really hum-ha about it, and then Issa's like, "Girl, let me see the picture," because we do that. And Molly showed her the picture of Quentin, and he was like, "Oh, he got a beard. That's cute."
That's
And that's something
cute.
that I probably, and that's something that I, not that I don't find little Rel attractive, but that's something I can see my, I've said that before to friends. Like I've commented on something totally different because I was like, oh, okay, I see why you're not really seeing it for him, but I get it, girl.
See, whenever somebody says they're cute, like that was just her way of saying that she didn't think Quentin was, which we could get into. I actually think Lil Rel is cute.
Yeah, me too.
I am a fan of Big Guy Twitter. Whenever it trends on Twitter, I'm always on there. I like my guys thick. I'm sorry. I'm not really, no shade. I'm no skinny dude. I'm sure y'all are great, but I can't. Because I got some booty and I need to be able to sit on your lap. I dated a skinny guy once, and every time I sat on his lap, he'd be like, oh, my leg, whatever. And it's like, okay, this is not the wave. So yeah, I think, she just didn't have that sexual connection with Quentin, and people can debate it all they want, where it's like, it's not about sex, it's about the emo. Sex is important. You're a married woman, you could tell me more than anyone. I think that sex is
That
important.
is very, that is, I mean, for me personally, that is very, very important. I tell my husband all the time, if that was missing, then we would not be together. And I mean, it just is real. I mean, I married my dick appointment, so please listen. Don't, I'm sorry to refer to you. Sorry I refer to you like that, but I mean, you know what it is. But I mean, that's true. I mean, for me, that was that's very, very true. So
Yo,
again.
I am totally recalibrating my dating. Marry your dick appointment. I love that stuff. Yo, you just started a movement. Like, real talk. I'm telling you.
But to see this goes back to like with the show and why it's just so fascinating to me and the fandom surrounding it is just that I never really can tell when someone is talking about insecure, and they're tweeting about it. It's just like, is wait, is this about them or is it about you? So, and I just never know. So that's why I kind of dread the engagement whenever I do tweet up, I tweet about it because I don't know what to say to somebody because I don't, you know what I mean? Like, I don't know if I'm commenting on, something you feel strongly personally because it's happened to you and you're talking about yourself, or you really are just talking about the character. So, and I wonder if other people feel that way, or do you feel that way too? Like, you're just kind of like, do I tweet you back, or am I muting this conversation? Am I letting
Listen.
you just do, or what are we doing? Because someone made a comment about how Issa and them are really good friends, and I'm like, huh?
Oh, you saw that, right? Yeah, I tweeted. I had a thread last week. That's what Steph is referring to. I had a thread last week where I was saying that, of all the ups and downs of the personal relationships of the characters of Insecure, the one love story that I loved in Insecure season two of Insecure was Issa and Molly's relationship. Because when you think about how they were the first season, right? Like the season, like the last few episodes of the first season, they were just at each other's throats, right? And when you watch season two, even with all the mistakes and the things that they've done, Issa and Molly have really been there for each other. Been there, like Molly, like when Issa's car broke down, Molly was driving her everywhere. When she made that, Moroccan dinner, or for Issa, that was just, like, I know you had to move out your apartment. Your relationship with Lawrence was finally DOA, right? Lawrence basically was like, it's over. And so that's how you treat your friends. It's like, and I try to explain this to people, and I think about my own female relationships, is that your best friends know the difference, right? Like, I feel like that's the key to being a good friend. It's like being a good friend is giving them the truth. Sometimes, when they don't want to hear, be like, okay, girl, you messing up, okay? And then there's a time where you just have to shut me fuck up.com and just be there and support them. You know what I mean? Like, you don't want to be that nagging friend. Like, you see them making the same mistake over and over again. And sometimes you just have to be like, okay, girl. You know what I mean? Like, you take them out for a drink or you go out, whatever it is. Like, sometimes you just need to be silent and just listen. And sometimes just be there for them while they work it out. It may not be on the
Exactly.
time, it may not be on the timetable that you like. They will work it out eventually. But sometimes, and that's the thing about friendships, is that sometimes you have to, well, that's the requirement of a friendship, is that you have to accept the flaws or things you don't like about them. Like, you, okay, I don't like the fact that you're dating a married man or whatever it is that you may have a problem with. But sometimes you just have to be like, they'll work it out. I've said my piece. Like, I don't think it's a good idea for you to, be sleeping with this person or to have a relationship with this person. And you just have to give them the space sometimes to just work it out. And so there was this one woman, she's a writer for the AV Club. Girl, I don't know. She just jumped in my mentions and she was like, oh, I think Molly and Issa have a horrible relationship because they're not honest with each other. They're fake. They have a fake friendship. And I was like, okay, no.
But they've been
you're
honest with
entitled.
one another.
Right. I mean, listen, even in a friendship, there's sometimes things that you don't feel like you want to tell your friends sometimes. I don't think there's any friendship on earth where you tell them everything that you're thinking 100% of the time. Sometimes we keep things to ourselves. Sometimes we just feel like, okay, I'm not ready to disclose this yet about myself, right? And so I just felt to say, I mean, she's entitled to her opinion, but to say that Molly and Issa's friendship is fake, I just don't buy that. And the way she was just in my mentions, I was just looking at it like, girl, you need
But
a
see,
therapist. I'm not your therapist. I can't help you.
but see, that's what I'm saying. So, and that is just an example of how, like, I don't look forward to the discourse that happens when after this show sometimes because it just like really goes left and people really get in their feelings and it's just so fascinating to me. It really, really is. But that's why the show is so good, because of that. That's, to me, I think that's why the show is so good and it's been so successful, because people have that type of visual reaction to the stuff that these characters do. Because they,
Yes.
yeah, so, and even when, like, with Lawrence and
Lawrence.
how, right,
The
the Lawrence Hive, and like how crazy they've been. And I really appreciate it in the last episode of season two how we finally got a real conversation between Issa and him and Lawrence about how the relationship felt and how they feel one another. And I thought that was Issa acting her ass off in that. But all right, that scene had me in my feelings. But I mean, it made me feel a little bit more different about Lawrence. Lawrence was getting on my nerves this whole entire season, to be very honest, because he was just doing dumb shit. Issa was too, but everybody was getting on my nerves. But Lawrence a lot. But this gave some clarity to a lot of stuff that he was, well, some of the stuff he was doing, and made me feel a little bit different.
Yeah, I appreciate the fact that in that final conversation, well, final for now, between Issa and Lawrence, is that Lawrence, it took him 2 seasons, but he finally owned his shit. He finally, because, he made, I mean, yes, he was wrong. I'm definitely not, glossing that over. I mean, there's a lot of hurt when you find out that your partner has, cheated on you. But, I think it was a couple of episodes where he had a talk with his friend. I forget who his character's the character, and he has glasses, he's light skin. But he was like, "So you gonna take your part in this? In what went wrong in this relationship?" He was like, "You shut down for 2 years. Like you weren't working. Issa was supporting you, right? And she and when she looked at Daniel, Daniel is like hustling, ambitious music producer, and also they already had a past with each other. He's like, "I'm not saying what Issa was right, but I'm just saying that you need to acknowledge the fact that she was not happy in this relationship, right?" Because Lawrence and Issa are both passive aggressive people. That is like the worst combination ever. Not saying what you really want. Because I said this to a friend of mine. I was like, after 1 year of Lawrence not working, Issa needed to have that discussion with him, like, "Yo, bro, what you doing? Like, it's been a year. You gotta get off this couch and wash your ass and go get a job."
But
Okay.
I'm
Yeah,
pretty sure
so
she
yeah,
is, because black women.
And that's the thing, right? Is the fact that she was kind of stuck in this thing where she was like, "I don't want to be the nagging black woman. I don't want to be the nagging, neck rolling, finger snapping, like, I have to get a job." And so black women, we usually fall into this martyr role, right? Where we're like, "Oh, I want to show that I'm not angry black woman." And sometimes it's a disservice to us because then we become passive and then we lose ourselves, you know what I mean? And we're not doing him any favors, so.
See at the show. The show. So I am happy that there's a season three. I think that that baby is not what is Tiffany's husband's name?
Is it Daniel? I feel like it's
No, it's not
Daniel.
Daniel, it's something else.
I'm gonna look it up.
Derek, right?
Derek.
Derek feels right. I could be wrong.
Right. Let me see if I can find his name. Let's see. Who do we have for the cast? Yeah, I don't know why I'm forgetting his name. I really do look him up, the way.
I really feel like it's Derek. I don't know what he just looks like a Derek.
Derek, yes, Derek Dubois.
Yeah. So I feel like that baby might not be his.
I'm seeing two. I'm seeing two theories about Derek and Tiffany. Tiffany, right? One is that Derek is on the down low. He's really gay, and I'm not really sure where that's
Y'all know
coming
where that
from.
came from.
Yeah, I was just sort of like, what? He hasn't said or done anything that has made me think otherwise. But then I thought about, and I'm just throwing this left field out there. I had a conversation with Mike. He's on Twitter, Mike Trey. And Mike and I had this really fascinating conversation where, Mike is super tall. He's like 5'5", 250 pounds or whatever, fuck you up, totally tall. But the sweetest guy. But he was saying that his experience as a lighter skinned black man, he was like, the stereotype for lighter skinned black men is usually that they're, less masculine, that they're more effeminate, and that they're usually gay. Especially if you're light skinned and are, good looking in any way, they use the word pretty. A
Right.
pretty boy. Right, which you'll never hear them say that about Idris Elba or Morris Chestnut or any darker skinned looking black men, right? It's or they're virile, they're sexy, but lighter skinned black men, and he's just talking from his experience. He was like, usually the idea is that we're not as good in bed, we're X, Y, and Z. So I'm wondering if this theory about Derek being gay has something to do with him being a pretty boy or lighter
Probably,
skinned
I
light
can see
skinned,
that.
right?
I can see that, and that's kind of some bullshit, or it is some bullshit to come up with that theory just based off of that. I think that speaks a lot to some other stuff. Again, people bringing in their own whatever to the conversation with this, but that's left field as hell. Now,
I haven't seen anything. But I personally hope that's not true, because I just am not in the mood for a down low storyline. We that's
no, and then
not
like it wouldn't make any sense.
Nope.
Either.
I like your
So,
theory better of the baby potentially not being
yeah, because
okay.
cause he brought up the friend at work, Mike or whatever, and he got rid of him. And I'm not saying the baby is Mike at work, but Tiffany, Derek said that Tiffany was with Issa and them when he was over Lawrence's house. But when we saw Issa and them, Tiffany wasn't there that night because they were all watching Due North. So what was
Oh
Tiffany?
shoot, I didn't even catch that. Ooh.
So I mean, Tiffany could have very well just changed her mind and been at home, because of morning sickness or whatever. But it would be kind of weird that she wouldn't tell Derek that, like, oh, I decided to stay home instead. So I don't know. I mean, and then like they try to paint their marriage as being like perfect, and I feel like Tiffany mentioned at some point in season two about them going through something, and then when they tried to ask her about it, like she just kind of brushed over it. So I don't
Yes.
know. I don't know. I mean, as messy as the show is, I would not be surprised if they end up not being his child.
Yeah. I mean, I think the one character on the show who feels a little bit off key to me is the Tiffany character. Like, Tiffany is just, she's a little, and this is nothing against Amanda Seales. I think her portrayal of Tiffany is hilarious, but it's a little surface to me. It's like the bougie light skin girl. You know what I mean? And I
Yeah.
was like, and her hair was super blonde this season. I'm like, I'm not sure what's going on with that, but I'm kind of hoping that in season three that they will complicate her character. I want to see some messiness from Tiffany, because she's just a little too perfect for me. It's creepy.
No, it
It's
is, and I hope there is some type of payoff to that in season three. So we'll see. And lastly, I mean, I guess, instead of zigging, you got to zag. I don't know why Issa was really mad at Daniel for giving her a facial, because I felt like he didn't. I didn't think he did that on purpose, for one. And then
We need to
two,
talk about this.
he okay, because I'm like, he told you, girl, and you didn't either. You gonna catch it. Or you gonna move. You have to know that going in. You need to know going in whether or not you about to have a protein shake or you gonna move out the way.
A protein shake.
You gotta know. That has to be determined prior to even doing that.
Right.
And she was doing the hella most. And then there was that weird conversation that her and Tiffany had at the sexplosion about
Right.
black women not sucking dick. Where I'm just like, this is 2017. That was the one thing that happened that kind of made me say, wait, what the hell are y'all doing in the writers? Who wrote this? Because that was very weird. That was
I
very.
actually have a theory about that, because
Okay.
like you, I saw the critiques of that episode, which I thought was a, because I'm like, oh great, yeah, we have episode talking about oral sex, and specifically because that's an imagery we don't really see on primetime television, of black women pleasuring men orally,
No,
right?
we don't see that. You're right.
And particularly the protagonist, not like some supporting character or some side piece. Like, this is the main character going down on her man. I was like, yes, I'm here for it. But yeah, as for the scene with this explosion, the scene where they were at the sex expo, from what I understand, one of the writers of that episode was Regina Hicks.
Okay.
And she, I'm just looking at her pictures. She looks like someone who's probably maybe mid 30 to 40s, I think. I'm not sure. I don't really have a year of birth for her, but it would make sense. I think there could have been an age thing because I think Gene Demby, he's the host of the NPR show Code Switching. He was like, "Why does this episode feel like it was written in 1993?"
Yeah, like
And
this
I
felt like
think,
something that would be on Girlfriends.
yeah, exactly, right. And actually, she was a writer on Girlfriends, so ha.
Oh, man.
Yeah,
Oh,
so yeah, I felt like once I looked it up because I was like, I don't think Issa would have written this. This doesn't even sound like Issa. So
right.
yeah, Regina Hicks is one of the writers, and it was co-written with another black man. I don't know if he's queer or straight, I'm not sure, but I think maybe there could be an age thing as far as the writer's perspective as to why that episode felt a little weird.
Yeah.
And so me personally, again, I'm in my 40s, I was just like, okay, are we still having the discussion of black women not going down on men? Because I thought we already handle
Right.
that. Are we still talking about this? Oh, black women don't give head. Black women, and then the whole, oh, if you don't give him head, he's gonna go to a white woman. Because this idea that white women are the freakiest and they do everything, and I'm just like, this is not even my, again, this is not my real life experience. Because I talk to my black female friends, and trust and believe, we are doing a lot of freaky shit. Okay, and
Right.
speaking that's been normalized, like, of course you go down on your man. Like, I don't know any woman, single woman or married or whatever, I'm not sure how you can get away with keeping your man and you're not speaking into the mic, so to speak. I just don't see that because you say that they need their medicine. Men need their medicine. When they get cranky, you need to give that out, is all I'm saying. And once that, you're good. Oh, I'm not really sure how you can maintain a sexual relationship with a man and not go down on him. And
Shit, I don't
yeah.
understand how vice versa, how anybody can remain any type of relationship, man or woman, without going down, to be very honest. But that was the one part in the show where I was just kind of like, huh, I don't know where that
Yeah.
came from. It was weird.
Yeah, and then the whole part, when Issa decided to go down on Daniel, and then he, splooshed in her eye. I mean, it was funny. I thought it was funny, but
It was funny.
I didn't think that the scene was going to happen, like was going to devolve the way that it did. I thought, Issa would be upset. Daniel would have bought her like a napkin or something. She slipped out. Like her, I just felt that her reaction was just not proportionate to what happened. It's like, okay, he caught you in the eye, girl. Okay, you could have been a little upset or whatever, but I didn't feel that she needed to, like she was just on DEFCON 5. Like it just, and then it transferred into the next episode where she had Molly on the phone, and Molly was like, "Oh, let's go to his house and we're gonna throw eggs at his." I was just like, if my girlfriend told me that, I would have laughed. Like I don't think it merited. Well, okay, I'll have a confession here. Whole idea of a guy giving a girl a facial, right, or coming on her face, I'm gonna have full disclosure here. I was not comfortable with that until a few years ago. I was rather conservative when it came to that because I always saw it on porn sites, right? And
Right.
when the context of happening on porn, it was always sort of like this submissive, like I don't know what the word is. It's almost like a humiliation in a way. You know what I'm saying? It was never loving. It was never, you know what I'm saying? Like, yeah, girl, I'm gonna come in your.
Like it was
And
agreed
so,
upon.
yeah, and so it was just like when you look at porn and you look at that, it was just like it just left, pardon the pun, a bad taste in my mouth. I was just like, I don't think I want to do this. And then it really took me being comfortable with the partner that I had. There was a space of trust and respect where I knew that he respected me and I knew that it wasn't about humiliation. It wasn't about him disrespecting me. It's a visual thing for them. Like, once I was able to deconstruct that and understand what it was about, then I felt comfortable with that. And again, I'm still selective with the guys that I do that with. But, you know, I get it. I understand why some women may be resistant to it and may not be comfortable with it. But then again, too, her reaction was just next level. And it was not, and I think maybe the reason why Issa reacted the way she did is maybe she was feeling that Daniel probably saw her as like a hoe or a thought or whatever. You know what I'm saying? Because I'm sure Daniel wasn't thinking that. I think
I didn't think he meant to do it on purpose. Like I said, I think she zigged when she said she should have zagged or figured out what she was going to do.
Right. You know, so I was just like, it really was not that serious, girl. Like, you could have just wiped your eye and just kept it moving. So, I would like Insecure to kind of revisit this again and not. I just feel like because the show represents Black women's sexuality in a specific way, I would like to see a scene or a movie where a Black woman is pleasuring her man orally and it doesn't go wrong. I'd like to see a happy ending.
I mean, and pun intended, but right. No. And also just go back and just like give us some type of like why Issa reacted the way she did. Is the way that she thinks, like you said, Daniel sees her, or is this just something else, a bad, which was that a trigger for her for something that happened before or what? So it was just weird. So I hope in season three, like, we get some context from her character to just kind of put towards that. And it's kind of like, oh, okay, well, I guess I get it. But girl, you still did the most.
Yes, you did.
Okay. Well, I mean, do you have any other, anything else you want to say about Insecure before we wrap things up?
One thing I did want to mention about Insecure is the soundtrack. The soundtrack from the first season was dope.
My God.
The soundtrack from the second season was gorgeous. I know Rafael Sadiq from 2020 Tony was like the music supervisor, I believe. And there's another gentleman that works on the music soundtrack for Insecure. But I have to say, I love the music. They've been putting me on to so many artists that I've never heard of before. And even changed my mind about certain artists I really wasn't checking for. Like, I knew about SZA. You know, I heard about her, saw pictures of her. I was like, oh, she's so cute. She was like a Black Barbie doll. But I really wasn't. Like, I think I saw a clip of her stage performance. And I think I saw her performing at the Grammys. Mm-hmm. Was it the Grammys or the MTV Awards? I was like, eh. But then I really got to sit down to listen to her album. And I was like, yo, this album is dope. Like, I've just been playing SZA all the time. And then there's this other author, this other artist called Daniel Caesar or Daniel... Yeah, Daniel Caesar.
Can I tell you that song breaks me down?
Oh my God, Needy Things? Woo! It's Needy Bees. Needy Bees, yes. That was it was played during the love scene where Molly and Joe first slept with each other. Girl.
Listen. And then
that song's gonna get some burn.
And the one song that they play when Issa and Lawrence have like that little future that never happens, I think it's by Daniel Caesar. It's Coming Back Home to You, or that's the lyrics or whatever to the song. But that song, I have so many emotions. I feel like that song makes me emotional as fuck for no reason.
Yeah.
What is the name of that song? I can't.
Did they have a listen? Cause that was the season finale, right?
That was a season finale. And I'm trying to find the name of the song. And I just listened to Blessed. It's called Blessed. And so many feelings. Mm-hmm. That's just, yeah.
Oh, I'm checking on Twitter right now. And I think Atlanta just wrote, is it Outstanding Writing? Let me see what they won. Atlanta won something at the Emmys.
Oh, yeah, guys. We're sorry. We're recording while the Emmys are on. So we'll be wrapping this up soon.
Oh my God.
But yeah, so
the soundtrack.
So good. So good. And it's on Spotify. So if you want to listen, like, there's an actual, it's the playlist for Insecure. And I've been listening to it all week, like all last week. It was the only thing I had on that I was listening to. So check that out. If you haven't checked out Insecure, sorry for the spoilers. I'll put that in the show notes that there are spoilers for it, and check it out if you haven't. It's a I like it. That's the show that I really, really love.
Yeah,
So, Rebecca,
it's great.
I think you got some things going on, so let the people know where they can follow you, what you have going on, plug what you need to plug.
Oh, sure. You can find me on Twitter. My Twitter handle is at filmfatale_NYC. Last week, I just launched my Patreon page. And for anyone
Yay.
who doesn't know what Patreon is basically a website where creatives of color, creatives in general, can create a page and they're looking for patrons, right? Sort of like the old school of, patrons giving money and supporting artists in order for them to create content. So if you go to my Patreon page, it's pinned on my homepage. I'm going to be, doing movie reviews, TV reviews, video essays. I'm going to get into the podcast game once I figure out the mechanics. So yeah, so with the Patreon page, you're basically, supporting artists in order and giving them the financial freedom to commit and create art. And so yeah, I've been, in the corporate world for who, and yeah, so I just, left my corporate job, and so I was like, oh, I have all this free time now. I can sort of pursue the things that I've always wanted to do. I always thought about, like when I was at my desk complaining, I was like, oh, I'd rather be doing A, B, and C. So now I have time to do A, B, and C, and I'm gonna do
Yay,
that.
I'm so happy for you.
Thank you. And then so yeah, so I created my Patreon page, posted my first video review, and this week I will have my review of Kingsman: The Golden Circle up this week, and I will also be covering the Urban World Film Festival taking place in New York from September 20th to the 24th. There's some really good stuff going on, so I'm gonna get some behind the scenes footage and get some interviews. Ava, Queen Ava, will be at Urban World Fest. We're going to be screening the season premiere of Queen Sugar.
Ooh.
And so she's going to be there with Julie Dash and the cast for a panel after the screening. They're also going to be premiering Marshall, which is the biopic of Thurgood Marshall with Chadwick Boseman. And Chadwick Boseman will be there with the cast and director. So yeah, I'm going to be getting all that stuff and posting it on my Patreon and, maybe posting a couple of pictures on my Twitter page. So look out for that.
Yes, please do. And if you aren't already, you should really be following her. So I get on that. So thank you so much,
You.
Rebecca, for joining me. This, like I said, was long overdue, and we got to do this again. We really, really do.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
I'll have to have you on my podcast.
I can't. I am looking forward to it.
Great.
All right, guys. Well, this has been another episode of Lemonade. If you haven't already, subscribe to the Patreon. I've been watching a lot of Sesame Street, so something is probably going to come out of that. If you haven't seen the thread already on my page, y'all know I have my imagination, so I think I might do something with that. We'll see. I don't know, maybe just me reviewing the Sesame Street show as an adult or what, but something's going to come out of that. And yeah, I think that's it for now until Luke Cage or something is out. So until then, guys, I will talk to you guys in, I guess, a couple of weeks. Thank you for joining. Bye.